Good morning. It's 8:17. You're listening to the Local News Hour. Our guest this morning, first off, Diane Foster. She's the Park City Manager. And Jeff Briggs. He is the Budget Operations and Strategic Planning Manager for the city. And they are here to give us a bit of an update on the upcoming council meeting scheduled for tomorrow. Thank you for coming.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Good morning.
So another busy, what else is new? Another busy council meeting agenda.
Yeah, so, really midsummer. I'm sure it's going to lighten up.
Yeah, I'm sure. So staff, it looks like, has prepared an RFP draft for a social equity coordinator. And there's not a salary yet determined for this position. Have you decided? Is it a freelance? Is it a contract position? Will it be a permanent position with the city? Where's the funding coming from? What's the thought behind it?
I'll start off and then I'll hand it over to Jed. Jed has been leading our social equity efforts within the city. As far as this new critical priority, I will say that many departments have been working on social equity issues for years and years, including recreation, transit, and others. When it comes to this, what staff is recommending and what council has discussed before is going outside and having a third party host a social equity coordinator. The nonprofits in the community are doing an amazing amount of work on this topic already, whether it's seniors, different people with different abilities, people from different cultures or different national origins, lots of issues in there. And what we're suggesting and what the folks in the community have talked to us about is that it would be good to have someone who's additive and someone whose job is to look at where are the gaps. And so we don't, as staff, we don't think that that's best housed within city staff, but by a third party. And Jed has budgeted for this, and depending on where council wants to go with it, we may look at some changing the budget before we adopt it on the 21st.
So you are thinking it's a consulting kind of role then, that they're going to come in and look at the programs that are in place now and make suggestions or that type of thing?
That's definitely a great description. One of the things that Councilmember Nan Worrell has talked about specifically wanting is when Aaron Newman came in as the mental wellness coordinator for the county, he came in and worked with the community to build a strategic plan. This would be one of the functions that we would look forward to, is having this person work with the existing nonprofits and work with the community to identify are there gaps and needs, as well as identify a strategic roadmap. You know, as the facilitator, Kilo Zamora, who teaches at the University of Utah and has a depth of experience in this area, as Kilo reminds us, this is an adaptive area, and it's not something like a broken leg that we're going to fix tomorrow. It's something that we're going to be working on for a long time.
Okay. Do you want to add anything to that, Jed? Or
I think it's kind of exciting. You know, we made this our council made this a community critical priority back in March, social equity. And I think a lot of people have been asking us, well, what does social equity mean? And we've really talked about it in terms of kind of celebrating diversity, that diversity is part of our strength. And one of the reasons that I think we want to have it kind of be outside the city is that it's a community resource. It's not something that the city should drive necessarily, but the community should drive it. And we want to support that.
Okay. Is there a ballpark in terms of what we're thinking we're going to budget for that? Or,
well, in the tentative budget, the one that we adopted at the beginning of May, there was $50,000 that we put in there. And that was just, you know, a placeholder type of position. But we could go, in the staff report, it says between $50,000 and $200,000. Our recommendation in the staff report is $100,000. But council can look at it and look at the pros and cons. When we're budgeting, you know, we're in the middle of the budget process, so that makes it nice that we can kind of talk about these things and change the budget before we finally adopt next month.
Okay.
And it's important to note that number, so if it's $100,000, that is not the salary. That would be salary plus benefits plus overhead. So you'd probably be looking, you know, we do recommend that this salary be commensurate to not exactly what it costs to live in the area, but it should have benefits and those types of things. And that's typically 30%. So you could be looking at a salary maybe in the 40, 50, 60 range. But the reality is that if this goes, if this RFP does get issued and a third party, likely a nonprofit, wants to do this, they will work with them to determine the exact salary.
So let me just get it clear. It's undetermined whether when you put the RFP out, it will be a permanent or a consulting position.
We need to give City Council that opportunity to decide if they want it to be internal to staff and or external. And our new community liaison, Rocio Torres, has picked up where Council Member Lynn Ware-Peak left off when she was on staff. And that position balances social equity plus community outreach. And obviously there's a lot of overlap in that area. Rocio has a strong background in that area. We expect her to keep working on those issues. And one of the recommendations that Jed has put in here is that we have an internal task force to look at greater opportunities for city within the city to further the goals of social equity.
Okay. Let's segue into the mental health update. It looks like the staff is presenting an update. It says the program that you're discussing will include the methods, question, persuade, refer, which is a method used when people are thinking about harming themselves or committing suicide. Tell us a little bit about what the staff is asking of the City Council with respect to this.
So QPR, as it's known, or as you just described it, this is actually a report from the Mental Health and Substance Abuse Programs Coordinator with the county, Aaron Newman. And this is a requirement, and actually it's a welcome requirement, of the contract that the city has with the county. So the City Council, because they identified it as a community top priority, they dedicated $60,000 that we send to Summit County to support this position. So, and as part of that contract, which Jed oversees, that was added. And as you'll see, there's been, right out of the gate, Aaron knew that it was important to put together a strategic plan, and that's identified in the report, as well as what progress has been made to date, which has been significant. And just like with the city, things we do in partnership at the county and the city, it's really made successful by not just government doing it, but doing it in partnership with nonprofits in the community. And you look at the activity in Mental Wellness Month, and it's been fantastic. And it's lots of different organizations participating.
Yeah, it's been quite a schedule this month, hasn't mm-hmm. it? So let's talk about the winter parking program. It looks like staff has a report ready to turn over to council. Can you give us an overview of what the numbers looked like and
sure.
how it
and
worked
I'll,
out?
I'll confess I'm a data nerd, and I think Kenzie Colson, our parking manager, and Robbie Smoot, who's by trade is a data scientist, they've put together a terrific report that really gets to providing information to council. And that information is specifically, why are we calling the parking program a success? Why do we think it's working? And the reasons are, for example, that in the February-March timeframe, we had 112 average daily weekday riders of the Homestake Park and Ride. Remember, that runs every 10 minutes, which is an amazing what's called headway or frequency of buses to that lot. On weekends, we went up to 149 average daily riders. And during Sundance, and remember, during Sundance, the lot was reserved for use by Main Street employees for parking. And that was a wonderful benefit, and people really took us up on it. We had 271 average daily riders of the Homestake shuttle. And that shuttle ran until 4 a.m., and over the next year, I think you'll see us do tweaks to that program. And where possible, we may be able to reduce some costs. Between 3 and 4 a.m., there were, infrequent riders, so we may change that to a dial-a-ride type of situation. But regardless, it was a huge success. And the other piece is that the goal is that the garage is not more than 85% full. And the reason is that we actually increase our carbon footprint when it's more than 85% full, because people are basically doing laps in China Bridge trying to find a space. And We only missed that target on a few days when we got to 90 and 100%, but there were a couple times during the year where it was maxed out. But mostly, the program worked.
Hmm. So how many people work on Main Street at any given time? I mean, is there a number that you know exists?
That's a great number, but it's definitely more than, I think, I'm guessing, right? It's guess around, got to be at least 500 employees, if not more.
Yeah.
It's a densely business populated area.
Yeah. Well, sounds like the program is working well. So we're keeping it pretty much the same, basically, through the summer?
Actually, for the summer, we are keeping paid parking in place. And even though people say, well, it's not even 50% full, human behavior is something that's incredibly difficult to change. And we want to continue to encourage people who've changed their behavior to continue to do that.
Okay. Let's move on and talk about this award that the Egyptian Theater is poised to receive. It is an historic preservation award. What is this all about?
Yeah, and in fact, Anya Gran, who's the historic preservation planner, she and I were discussing that we missed something in the staff report, and I thought about it this weekend, and then I completely missed it. This is actually the Cindy Matsumoto Historic Preservation Award. The city council named it after her, so we'll correct that in the presentation and today. So the city likes, in addition to the work that the Museum and Historical Society does in recognizing and honoring historic preservation work done in the community, the city also recognizes it. And this one of the Egyptian Theater, which is an amazing reuse, and former Mayor Jack Thomas was very involved in that, reviving that building, as well as a large number of community members in keeping that alive. The City Commission, there was a competition, and Marianne Cohn, is former council member, is doing the art for this one. And the art hangs in City Hall, and it's really fun to walk down and see just different buildings and what they look like. So we're really pleased to have present council with the Cindy Matsumoto Historic Preservation Award for the Egyptian Theater.
Great. And what about the Prospector Square condos? And apparently the city is planning to hire a pest control company to deal with the problems there. What's the timing on that? And is it a tenting kind of thing that has to happen? So do people need to move out? What's going to happen with that?
So people do not need to move out, and it's a great question. And the city, we actually we don't use this provision very frequently, but we do have an emergency contract provision in city code for health and safety, and we did use it in this case. So I actually signed the contract yesterday, and because we didn't have a city council meeting last week, we didn't want this process to have to wait. So the contract was awarded. We did a bid process, which we need to do, and Orkin will be the pest control going in, and staff, committee of staff, reviewed all the pest control folks. I know I could not be on that panel, they reviewed that. And what this includes is it's not a one-time treatment. It's a multi-process treatment. It also includes that the city will treat, if folks are moving out, then there's a provision to be able to treat their belongings as they're moving out. And we've even learned that a lot of rental properties have what are called hot rooms that they treat stuff in. So it's an expensive process. I think it was around $50,000 for the contract, and this is for 23 units, and it's incredibly important both to the health and safety of the folks who are living there, as well as to their neighbors, because bugs don't stay in one property.
And this is we're talking the bed bug problem.
Bed bug as well as cockroaches.
Transference and cockroaches transfer as well.
I'm happy to get off this topic.
Wow. Okay. So, the city is looking at amending the land management code to simplify solar power in historic Old Town. Is that a thing that's going to finally resolve? And people will be allowed to install solar panels?
They are currently allowed. What this does, and thanks to planner Anya Grand for this, it's streamlining the process for solar panels in Old Town. And what will happen is it'll be, you can put them on the sides or rear of the pitch roof as long as they're flush mounted. You just can't have them standing up or having them be incredibly visible from the street. So we still do prohibit them on the front of the historic structure, but this is a much more permissive code, and it's in alignment with council's and the community's critical priority of energy. The other pieces include that we'll be treating solar energy systems the same as accessory buildings. So if you want to put an array in your backyard, if your roof doesn't have the right pitch for it, for example, then we treat it like an accessory building and you need less of a setback, for example. So it makes it easier to put it in your yard. And then solar panels and skylights kind of got stuffed in the same section of the code, and we separated that for convenience of use.
Okay. And then the art project for the China Bridge Garage. So give us a rundown of what that is, what it involves, and how we've come about deciding on the artist that will be doing the work there.
I'm super excited about that one. And thanks to the Public Art Advisory Board and KPCW did participate in that process because they are a tenant. And the purpose of that was, one, to make China Bridge look better, and also to, as you saw with the cleanup project last summer, with just a paint can do amazing things. And the artist that's selected on this one is doing a wildflowers, but they're in, it's a similar painting on each wall, on each level, but the colors are different and the colors correspond with what level you're on. So it's going to be beautiful and it's going to be functional.
Now, I understand this isn't a local artist. Did we not get responses to the reach out for bringing in local artists to do the work, or did
you know, we
not?
Actually have a preference in our purchasing policy for local. In this case, the Public Art Advisory Board did not select this, and there was tons of discussion. They spent a long time on this. It ended up, I believe, it was a unanimous decision of the Public Art Advisory Board.
Okay, so maybe they're the people to talk with about how the process worked and that
sure,
kind of thing.
And also Jenny Dearson is the staff member who organizes that committee and issued the RFP, and I'm sure Jenny would love the opportunity to talk about that. And also, council had requested a couple of years ago to see if we could put art on transformer boxes that Rocky Mountain Power owns, and I don't believe it's actually been done in the state. And Jenny's been working with them, and we're going to have art on transformer boxes. Mm. And the RFP is out for that now. So if you're a local artist, please go on parkcity.org and grab that one. We'd love to have and would prefer to have local artists wherever possible.
Okay. One more question.
Sure.
It sounds like there was an acoustic report that has discovered about 106, 107 gallons of water is being lost every minute in some of our pipe. Water main pipe. And I'm just wondering could it be a cause other than leaks? And if it is a leak, what does that involve?
So the two things that staff believes are going on here is, one is that there are leaks and water systems. You would think with all the technology that's been invented that we would have some way to just know if there is a leak in a pipe. And the reality is we don't. And in our town, especially in areas where there are mine tailings, they get eaten a lot faster. In fact, staff throws in like a bag of some kind of metal, maybe it's magnesium, into the ground when they put a pipe in, and it's called cathodic protection. And basically the stuff eats the bag of magnesium before it'll eat the pipe, which is kind of stunning. So they've been doing a lot of work to protect our pipes. So we lose water from leaks, and also there's probably just inaccurate data in some cases. And so Jason Christensen, who's been working on this project, is doing both. We've never done acoustic leak protection, and this is a best practice from some other cities. And just this part of the project, so they haven't done the Upper Deer Valley where they think there are a bunch of leaks going on, this will save $54,000 a year just in what it costs us to treat water, so we won't have to treat more water and energy costs. So that's a pretty big deal. So it's a year and a half payback for this project, which is a terrific ROI, no matter if you're in the public or private sector.
Okay. And that's going to be talked about and decided on tomorrow, I
mm-hmm.
guess. Okay.
And I will remind folks, and part of the reason I brought Jed, and sorry he hasn't had an opportunity, we are talking about the budget tomorrow. And council will be talking about fees as well as, and I know some folks in Thames Canyon are also interested in the golf maintenance building that will be discussed as well. So we'll be talking about water rates and what else, Jed, which other kind of rates we're talking about yesterday, tomorrow.
Stormwater, there's a CSL, the convention sales license, ICE.
Ice rink.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
We just say ICE.
You're not going into the ICE business.
Okay. And yeah, what time is the discussion on budget? Do you know off the top of your head?
That is 3:30.
3:30. Okay, so if people want to come and listen, give input.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the coming weeks, we'll be having council will be back to discussing the capital budget and Treasure Hill. And so we really do want the public to show up for that and talk to council about, are there things that they would like council to delay or not do in addition to us not building the new public utilities building, in addition to not doing the Main Street Plaza on the Brewpub lot, and some other pieces that council's looking at. So we really do want public participation in that as well.
Right, right. That's in the news discussion, mm-hmm. and in the editorial pages, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Diane Foster, for coming in and talking to us about the agenda. And Jeff Briggs, thank you for coming in to talk about budget.
Thank you, Carolyn.
My next guest is Chris Crowley. He is the Summit County Emergency Manager, and he's going to tell us a little bit about fire prevention measures and a new software for residents that could be used to get immediate access to all kinds of different emergency and notifications from the county. Welcome, Chris. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So we're hoping, of course, no major fires this summer, especially just in light of all the projections with how dry things are and what a poor snowpack we had last year. But what is the county doing in terms of managing this up front and notifying neighborhoods and homeowners and business owners and just what needs to happen?
Well, I think first and foremost, everybody needs to be aware of the danger of wildland fire, so all of the forested areas and how critical it is that we manage the activities that we do, that we're very careful about fire at our homes, and that we're prepared.
So we're talking careful on fire pits if you have those at your homes, or will those end up being basically banned for this summer?
Well, I couldn't comment on whether or not fire pits are going to be banned, but one of the most important things to understand is that almost anything could start a fire, your car, a chainsaw, lightning, of course. One of the most important things that folks should understand is defensible space around their homes and just getting rid of those fuels and cutting back those trees that might lead to a fire connecting to your home.
Sure, so like boughs, fir tree boughs on your rooftop or up under your soffits. That would be a defensible space thing. What are there any other things that people maybe aren't aware of? I mean, foliage around the house should probably be cleared away to some degree.
Yeah. Absolutely, and there are a lot of great resources that homeowners or anybody in general can go to. If you go to summitcounty.org and to the fire wardens page, there's a nice diagram that shows you exactly how you can create defensible space around your home and the things to be aware of. Of course, fireworks are always a challenge, and that's something that you should be very, very careful with.
Yeah, you know, the other day I was out hiking and there was a huge amount of smoke coming from what appeared to me to be like the Red Pine area over by the canyons. And I contacted 911 because I didn't know if it was a controlled burn or if it was something that was of concern. And they were great. They said, no, it's controlled. Thanks for calling. But what should people do? Is that what they should do if they see something that is concerning?
Absolutely. There's no harm in calling it in. You may think that it's reported, but it may not. Controlled burning, that's a relative term. And one of the things that is extremely important is if you are going to burn, you need to make sure that you either have a permit to do that, which you can get through Summit County very easily, and it's free, and also to contact the dispatch to let them know that you're going to be doing that. And again, returning to the Summit County Fire Warden page, you can find out if the conditions are conducive to burning.
Sure, sure. So let's talk about earthquakes. Everybody is basically saying it's not an if, but when kind of thing. What is Summit County doing as far as if a quake does occur and ties between here and the valley, you know, communication is shut down or people are, you know, trying to get back and forth? What's in place for dealing with that kind of a disaster?
Well, the challenge, of course, with earthquakes is that it really encompasses all disasters. So it could be fires, floods, and crevasses opening up in the street. We, of course, are planning, and we plan very closely with our first response agencies and with Park City Emergency Management, so that we have the resources either from the state or from FEMA or from other agencies so that we can bring them to Summit County. The Red Cross is a great partner for us. But I think that if we really want to talk about earthquake preparedness, it starts at home. And community preparedness is one of the things that we are very, very focused on. And we encourage everybody to be prepared at home. So that starts with the most basic communication plan with your friends and family. You know, what are those phone numbers that you have stored in your phone? Do your kids have your phone number? Do you have an alternate location to or rally point to meet them? If you can't get from the valley, say, to Park City, you know, those are the very, again, a very practical level and basic plan for everyone. And then, of course, I would suggest that defensible space is a great thing. Understand how to, you know, turn off your gas. That certainly poses a large danger in an earthquake situation.
How do you find out where to turn your gas off? Is it usually at the meter, or?
It is at the meter, and it's actually a simple turn of a valve. But you need to have a wrench, and a common wrench, a crescent wrench, or something like that will work. But there's lots of information out there. BeReadyUtah.gov is a great resource for those kinds of instruction. I would also encourage everybody to join CERT, our Community Emergency Response Teams, where we teach a higher level of community preparedness and communication and emergency response.
Okay, great. And then one last thing. What I know that the Everbridge system is being considered, and it looks like there's going to be a presentation to the council today. Mm-hmm. Will you be involved in that presentation for the Everbridge system? And
yes. Okay. And it's not consideration. We have partnered with Park City, and we are up and running, and we encourage everybody to sign up for the Everbridge Alert System. And what it really is a countywide system. So for the first time, the entire Summit County, so Park City and all of the rest of the county, are on one alert system. So if there is an emergency, there's one location. And you can sign up at summitcountyalerts.org or at parkcityalerts.org. Doesn't matter which address you go to. The sign-up connects you with the entire county. It's very quick and very effective.
So if you've signed up, and it's a texting kind of system, if you've signed up on prior alert systems, will your phone number be transferred over to this new one, or do you basically need to just get on and do it yourself right now?
Yeah, we would prefer that everybody goes and signs up directly. This particular system actually has multiple contact options. So you can receive a text or an email or a phone call to your house. And because the system is quite robust, it will continue to call you until you acknowledge that alert.
Okay, it doesn't just send it out once, basically. It's
correct.
There's some kind of acknowledgement that happens.
Depending on the emergency, of course.
Okay. And so this has been decided. This is happening. What does a system like this cost? What's the price tag on something like that? Do you have any idea?
No, and it's a shared cost across the entire county. So we were fortunate enough, again, that Park City had already implemented the system, and we're really just expanding its capabilities, and we're expanding the area that we're utilizing the system.
Okay. Well, great. Anything else, Chris, that you want to share?
Well, again, I just encourage everybody to sign up for those alerts and work very closely on their family communication plan and defensible space.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming in. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. My next guest this morning is Jenny Dearson. Pardon me, Jenny. She is the special events manager with the city and is in to talk about, yay, summer events.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for coming. So our usual suspects are ready to launch the Sunday Silly Market this Sunday, right?
Yep. The first day. Park Silly Sunday Market does start this Sunday. I also wanted to start off by congratulating the Park City High School class of 2018. Graduation is on Friday. As we all know, that is a very well-attended event, and the graduation begins at 5. But just a reminder, on Friday night, if you are attending that, please remember to carpool to that event or take the bus there.
Yeah, the parking gets a little crazy along Lucky John. And
yep, just be mindful of the residents in the area. And again, please carpool to that event. It'll be a busy one.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people out walking on the streets and stuff. So yep. Drive slowly, watch carefully. Yeah, okay. And then the farmers market is going to be moving out of the Canyon parking lot and coming into the base. And tell us a little bit about that every Wednesday.
The Park City Farmers Market actually starts, I think, in about 3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And so that one's a little bit further off in the future. But that event, due to some of the construction out at the canyons, has moved to Park City base. So just here at the base of Park City Mountain Resort. And that'll be a great event that will be on Wednesdays from 12 until 6, the same beloved Park City Farmers Market. We have about 80 vendors at that event. A large amount of them, I think all of them, are local vendors to the state of Utah with local produce, so on and so forth. There'll be a little bit of music at some of those events, and then you can make your picnic basket and then just catch the bus and hop on over to Deer Valley, of course, for Wednesday night concerts as well. It's a perfect Wednesday.
That's amazing. I know. Isn't that great? So, but people will need to have parking available. So will it be similar to how it was set up with Canyons, where people could sort of park on the perimeter of the market type of thing, or what?
Yeah, so just parking up at Park City Resort Base, just as they have the venue there, but they'll also be parking up in the first time lot as well for that event when that one gets a little bit closer.
Okay, and that will happen in that first time parking lot. That's where the farmers market will be.
Yep, up by kind of where the Silver King Hotel is, kind of in that lot.
Okay, great. And Ragnar is coming up. That's a very busy episode here in Park City at a certain time.
Yep. And so that event has changed quite significantly over the last, 3 or 4 years. Ragnar Relay is on Saturday, June 2nd, throughout both Park City and Summit County. The peak time that we're going to really see runners coming through, specifically kind of along the Silver Creek area over by Home Depot, as well as Quinn's Junction, is going to be between noon and 2 o'clock on this Saturday. I think it is important is there are significant course changes. So people might remember that the run had historically come through the canyons and Park City Resort Base. This year, the run is actually going through the Silver Creek Junction, Quinn's Junction, Richardson Flats before heading back up into Summit County. And the finish will actually be up at the DeJoria Center. So a lot of the impacts are focused in Summit County, but the important part is on Saturday, please slow down and watch for runners on roads or on the side of the roads and make some time in those areas. Quinn's Junction on Saturday may be the place that if you're looking to go out on a hike or a ride, you might want to choose somewhere else. We do have the Minor Exchange at Quinn's Junction. And then later in the day, we have the NAC Barn Party that's actually going on, too. And they use some of the parking out there. So, again, enjoy all the other areas of town, kind of the resort areas, if you're looking to go on a hike or on a bike ride on Saturday specifically.
So you've got three things you're talking about. The Ragnar people will be out there, and they have vehicles. Their support people are often around and driving. And then you've got, you said the miners. What was the miners event that you just mentioned?
We have the NAC Barn Party. Ability Barn Party starts, I believe, at about 5 o'clock on Saturday evening. And that is a ticketed event, but it is well attended. And so there'll be quite a bit of parking out at Quinn's Junction for that event.
Okay.
I do want to mention another significant change of Ragnar Relay is they have continued to reduce the amount of teams they have. While we do tend to see quite a few team vans, they have continued to reduce those and still just make sure you know the peak time for Quinn's Junction will be between noon and 2 o'clock.
Okay. And then there's an event in South City Park near the gazebo, Noches de Verano.
Yes.
And that begins June 4th, Monday?
Yep. So on Mondays, June 4th through July 2nd, we have the Noches de Verano music series. That is put on by Brian Richards with Mountain Town Music, and it is a celebration of Latin culture and music and dance. It's a wonderful small event. That's a great example of what we call a level one event. We expect right around, usually see somewhere between around 100 people, but it's a fun community event, and that one will start at 6:30 and end by 8:30 p.m. in the evenings. And then I did also want to mention a few highlights for Silly Market, which does start this weekend, just some changes I want to make sure that the community knows about. Of course, the market is from 10 to 5 on Lower Main Street. So just remember, if you're out on Main Street on Saturday night, do not leave your car on Lower Main Street. That's between Heber and 9th Street. And then one of the main differences with the market this year is we will be charging for parking from 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the evening during market hours. That's both in China Bridge and any of the surface lots. That rate will be $5 an hour. So I think that's really important for community members to know. Those that have blue and C permits are welcome to park in the North Marsac and Gateway parking. And then Homestake for Main Street employees is available over at Homestake. And then that shuttle runs from 11 o'clock until 3 a.m. as per the normal schedule. If employees are looking to park at Homestake a little bit earlier, then they can take the usual buses along 248 or in front of Fresh Market or on Bonanza to get to Main Street a little bit earlier.
Okay, and people who don't want to pay for parking but want to come to the Silly Market, where do they go to park?
So a couple options there. There's free parking at the school district lots as normal. Every year, Park Silly Market secures those lots, and you can take the bus from there to the market. It's a great option with the free transit, of course, free transit schedule. And then, as always, Silly Market offers also a bike valet. It's going to be a beautiful weekend ahead, and so you're welcome to ride your bike or walk to the market as well.
Mm-hmm. That's a great option, isn't it?
Just another reminder, yeah. When you are attending the market, please bring your reusable bags. And remember, the pavement does get hot, so it's a good idea to keep pups at home as well.
Right. Okay, midweek mountain bike event. Tuesday starts June 5th.
Yep. So this is, I believe, the last in the series, Tuesday, June 5th. Round Valley starts in the evening. Again, last year, this event had four different series out at Quinn's Junction. We're down to two this year. We usually see around 250 riders out there for that event, so that's on Tuesday evening. I think it's also important to remember, I think Charlie has started up his trail reports. Courses should be marked no less than a week in advance. And so if you are out hiking on various trails, start looking for those postings of various events, so that you're aware of those trail impacts. And then next weekend, we have the Ski Town Lacrosse Tournament. That's June 8th and 9th. That's, again, out at Quinn's in the school district. We also have the Park City Trail Series starting up. That's a great series that starts with a 5K and goes all the way up to a half marathon to kind of train throughout the summer to get runners up to speed. And then I did want to make a couple of other reminders. One of the most exciting ones is that the Park City 4th of July Parade applications are online and available. The theme for this year is Winning Spirit, and that is really a theme that ties to our Olympic legacy, and we're celebrating that this year. And then I also wanted to mention that while the deadline is June 8th, which is next Friday for parade applications, late deadline is June 15th. So those deadlines are quickly approaching. We do try and focus on local businesses and residents participating in the parade. So we encourage anyone out there listening to get online. You can just go to parkcity.org and it's right there on the homepage and get in your 4th of July parade applications.
Okay, and what about transit service for starting June 8th? Summer transit starts June 8th. What does that mean?
So Alfred just wanted me to remind everyone that we are going back to the summer transit service on June 8th. So we have about a week until that begins. But again, our community has done so much to work towards our critical priorities of transportation. We depend on the community give us feedback and help make the changes that we're requesting. So make sure that you are using the bus and using alternative modes of transportation, carpooling as well. We have an incredibly busy summer ahead of us, but it's going to be a fun one, and we look towards everyone's feedback. With that, I think it's important. Our staff, special events staff, does switch to a 7-day schedule starting this week through September. So we are always out there watching and listening, and you can reach us at any time. The best way to get a hold of us is just to email specialevents@parkcity.org. And you can also send any feedback to SEAC, which is SEAC@parkcity.org. Really helps us when we know in the moment of any challenges or suggestions that the community has. We can normally go out and look at something and get a challenge fixed sooner rather than later when we know about any concerns.
We just talked with the county about the new system, Everbridge, an emergency alert system. But you also have an alert system that does talk about emergencies, but also just traffic updates, transportation updates during this busy time. How will they overlap, if at all? If you're signed up for the 888-777 PC events, does that mean that you'll also hear about any kinds of emergency alerts as well? I mean, what needs to happen?
So what's great
to just...
is the Everbridge platform is something that the city adopted last year, and now the county is also using. So it's great because it's usable countywide. The specific text alert for PC events is for residents that are wanting to know about specific impacts with regards to events. And again, that is transportation and emergency information. It's not promotional in nature. So we continue to encourage people to really register for that. You know, wherever you're living in town, if you want to understand where to avoid or if there's a traffic accident, we're going to push that information out and make sure everyone knows. I think last year we also had a couple of power outages during some major events, and we pushed it out that way so people knew what to expect and when the power would be back on.
Thanks, Jenny.